Welcome to StablePod, the podcast that explores the exciting world of decentralized systems and beyond. Join us as we delve into the limitless possibilities of decentralized governance, decentralized finance, and decentralized organizations with the most creative and innovative minds in the space. We'll hear from trailblazers who are building, shaping, and maintaining the future of these decentralized systems. From DAOs to NFTs, DeFi to Web3, we cover it all on StablePod. Welcome back to StablePod. I'm your host, Juan Esquivel. I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Gustav Ehrentoft. How are you feeling today, Gustav?
Doing good. Very good.
Today's guest is a special one. I've been following them for a number of years. I would say they're like a prolific writer, prolific builder, prolific ship poster.
Don't say that.
I'm speaking of none other than David Phelps. Welcome to the show, David.
Oh my God, thank you. It's good to be here.
So you just announced a big upgrade to your project, Joke Race, and a seed round to go with that. I would love to hear more about what's new with V3. And of course, for our listeners who may not be familiar with your project, you know, what is Joke Race?
Yeah, so Joke Race is what is a platform for what we call contests, for anybody to be able to launch a contest on any EVM chain. And the way I define a contest is someone puts a prompt to a community, people can submit responses to it, and then people can vote on responses. And then if you want, you can have a rewards pool attached to that to pay out the winners as well. And so this can be used for stuff like hackathons and grants. It can also, of course, be used for much more traditional governance as well, where you have full flexibility to define who submits, who votes, and how much voting power they have. And so what is really, I think, novel with the V3 that we launched is that we give you full flexibility to define those however you want. Literally just using a CSV. So literally, like, you can create a spreadsheet in Google Sheets where it's like column A is your addresses, column B is your voting power, and that is your governance for that specific contest. And so instead of being tethered to, you know, traditional like token voting, you can still do that if you want, but you could also do any sort of mechanism you want. And so you can get really, really creative in thinking about how you want to allocate both who can submit and who can vote, and then the amount of voting power that you want to give them as well, which then gets fun because you can start to bake in incentives, right? Where it's like, well, if maybe it's like token voting, but the longer I hold my token, the more voting power I have. And so then in that case, you know, yeah, you're preventing flash attacks of someone coming in and just suddenly buying up a bunch of tokens and attacking the treasury. Yeah, you're giving more power to like the OGs who've held the token for longer. But you're also creating this incentive to say, hey, hold the token longer, you're going to get more power the longer you hold it, right? And so then there's this incentive system in place as well. So I'll pause there.
So what was the main like changes with V3? Because Joke Race has been around for a while. Before that, I believe it was Joke DAO. What was the main like upgrades?
Yeah, well, one is it looks better. So we did a full graphic design, rehaul. So it actually is like looks okay now, which I, you know, I see this as the designer myself. I'm mocking myself on this one. I think that's a big one. The way the V2 worked was you would mint a voting token and then distribute that to your community. And so you did have full flexibility to distribute it however you wanted for that one-time vote. But you can imagine like distributing a voting token and airdropping that to tens of thousands of addresses. Like even 10,000 addresses is about 40 transactions that you would have to do through something like CoinVise. It's a real, real pain. And so just doing the allow list mechanism means that, you know, it's really simple, like literally just a CSV. You can upload that. We'll also start building stuff into our front end to abstract that away. So if you don't even want to do that, you'll be able to, you know, for example, give power to token holders, etc. But really the main thing is like this tokenless system where, you know, you track the addresses, then we put that into a Merkle tree in the smart contract. And then anyone submitting or voting can just check against that. And you can do full governance without needing a token at all.
So you mentioned a term here, a tokenless voting. I know this is something you've been vocal about in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe we should touch a little bit upon that topic. Why is like tokenless voting? Maybe you can just explain a little bit, just like what that means to you, and then why it means so much to you.
Yeah. So you know, I get branded a lot for being anti token, and there are definitely cases where I am anti token. There's also a lot of cases where I'm very pro token. Right. I think like proof of stake systems needing to, you know, have like economic security backed by tokens makes perfect sense. Stuff like this. I also am a big fan of you know, tokens that can give you dividends or residuals to, you know, rights over a project. Unfortunately, there's a legality issue with that in the US where I am right now, but it's a very cool mechanism, right? And so what I mean by tokenless is not anti-token. What I mean is that you are setting up this Merkle tree that's your allow list, and that can be based on any criteria you want. So if you want that to be tokens, you can do that. And what's really nice about that is, for example, let's say you have an NFT community or DAO where you're running on mainnet Ethereum and your token is there. Now you can run all of your governance on NEL2, right, without having to bridge the token over, because you just take the allow list of all the holders of that token. That's now your allow list for you to run that contest, that governance process, and any L2 you want. And so without bridging, right, without cross-chain composability, you have this really, really easy way where you could be having your token on one chain, but doing all your governance on another, where it's much, much cheaper to do so. And so that's really what I mean by tokenless, is that it's moving beyond the token as the limitation to the governance to let you define it however you want. So if you want to define it through tokens, that's great. If you want to define it through something like I mentioned before, tokens time duration of tokens held, that's great. If you want to move to something totally different, like, you know, just a select jury that's able to do it, or people who have won in the past now get to vote in the future, you can do that. Or, you know, amount of liquidity you provided to a protocol, you can do that. So it's really about creating a system for maximum customization, in which we are fairly unopinionated. We are just giving you the tools to be able to design this however you want, and trying to open up the governance design space.
So it sounds like, today at least, my understanding is that, like, this is not enforced like on chain, right? Because of course, if you kind of like subtract it and run it like on the joke, like as a joke race, you cannot really implement it directly via the core contracts of the protocols, right? Do you see like a future, like a setup where this could be possible, or is this something you have like theorized about? Because I think, like, you know, when a lot of people, they think, you know, governance, they also, you know, think that, like, hey, you know, we should at least move towards a future where the decisions are taken fully on chain and implemented on chain without the need for a multisig or some kind of like other external like deployment.
Totally. So we're 100% on chain, which is really important to emphasize. Like, when you are creating a contest, what you're actually doing is you're setting the parameters for a smart contract that you are then deploying on chain. When you're submitting, when you're voting, it's 100% on chain. So everything that you do through us is 100% on chain. And one of the reasons for that is because we want this to be really a protocol that anyone can build on top of. So if you can read the data from the votes, the smart contract, et cetera, it can then trigger actions across any other service, right? So you can imagine, you know, like Hats, for example, is just built, you know, this module on top of us, so that if you have an election through us, you know, people submit to say, I want to be, you know, the treasurer for this organization. Everybody votes, who gets to be treasurer. When they win that, they automatically get a hat, right? This NFT that is giving them rights over, let's say, the treasury or over whatever it is for them to enact their role. And so that's just like one example. Like, another one I think would be like very cool is like, imagine a retro public goods funding contest where it's like, we want to, you know, fund public goods that have already been performed. So the contest is, come up with your best metric for how people should be paid out. Everyone competes, they put out this metric, that's all in a smart contract, right? And then when the vote goes through, let's say that's automatically tied into like a Lagrange state proof, so that it then, you know, can calculate everyone who's met those metrics and then pay them all out automatically. So it is really important for us to be on chain long term because of that executability piece. Now, I think that the question you're asking, Gustav, is like, you know, short term, does this give you access to the treasury? And the answer is no. We've deliberately built this so that it doesn't give you access to the treasury, because we don't want that risk of, you know, a single vote being able to control an entire treasury when it only should be speaking to a certain part of it. So you are right that, like, right now the way it works is like, I almost think about a rewards pool as like a one-time treasury, you know, and a contest is like, an allow list is like a one-time snapshot of who currently is in that organization. And so, you know, the rewards pool is like, yeah, you would fund that. And then that's like your one-time treasury for this specific decision to be enacted. Now, you are right, a multi-sig would have to fund that, right, for it to work.
Yeah, but... Yeah. From what I gather is that, like, the reason why it's not, it is like that today is because people haven't implemented it yet, right? I think, like, if you build, you know, a custom module and you could use contests directly to, you know, evoke those contracts, but it would need to, of course, be built. But technically it's possible, right?
It should be possible. Yeah. Like, you know, and I think, you know, long-term we'll start to build more into our front end, where, you know, we're thinking about calling them like powers, where it's like there's a power added to this contest, right? Where whoever wins it is added to the multi-sig, for example. Like that's the power that you add to the contest. And so, yeah, there is, I think, probably long-term potential to be able to command entire treasuries. I personally am kind of scared of it, but like, you know, again, I want to build the protocol that anyone can do whatever they want with it, even if I don't agree with them. So as long as it's legal, right? So I think like, you know, that is something that in theory, yeah, should be doable.
Yeah, I think what we're touching on is like the obviously the use case of it. Where can actually communities, protocols use Joke Race today? And I think it's like, yeah, that's what you're kind of describing is like, these are the use cases. But like, where do you see Joke Race? At the moment, it's very, you know, it does one thing very well, let's say.
Yep.
So like, where, how do you see it like evolving over time? Like we mentioned some of these like granting power to multi-sigs. So, yep. So like, how do you see that evolving? What's next for Joke Race?
So yeah, great question. So right now, I think the case we probably want to talk about most today is governance. But what's really interesting is that's actually just a subset of the things that this can be used for. So we have hackathons that are being run through us. We have grants processes being run through us. You know, you imagine a grants process where people all apply to get a grant, then community votes, and then they're paid out. You know, that's traditional grants. You do a hackathon, a bunch of people submit a project, jury votes in their favorites. The winner's paid out, that's a hackathon, right? And so you can do any sort of decision-making or any sort of process where people can submit and then vote, right, with this. And so bounties you can do as well, prediction games, you know, you could do as well, giveaways you can do. And we've even had like a lot of like marketing cases where, you know, a company will say, hey, what feature do you want us to build? We're going to give $400, you know, LifeHide did this, we're going to give $400 to the winner, right? And then you have their communities all thinking about their project. They're, you know, contributing their best ideas. They're prioritizing them in terms of what they want. They're completing actions in order to participate. They're going on social media to share it, to try to get votes. They're building on-chain reputation about who's meaningful. And so, you know, all of this can be like really powerful just for like as an engagement tool, I think, as well. Probably what we'll spend the rest of our conversation talking about is like the governance use case. But it's really interesting to have this, you know, almost abstracted protocol where you abstract governance away enough and everything is governance, right? Like, you know, we think governance is like just elections or something, but it's like your yearbook contest in high school where you're deciding, you know, who the best athlete is. Like that's governance, right? When you go on Twitter and you're liking some post, and then that is helping upvoted essentially for more people to see it, that's governance, right? And so just, you know, I think we forget that governance like runs through every part of society and what we do all day. And like, we're really trying to create, you know, a protocol that can you know, reach out there. So, yeah.
It's true. Like, we kind of like, it feels like sometimes we like recoined the term governance because it means like a lot to us, right? I think it's a little bit the same with like, you know, even worse with the term DAOs, because, you know, like whenever you say like, you know, DAO, then it means something very specific to everyone. And it can kind of like be a little bit problematic sometimes, even having a conversation about DAOs, because, you know, like it means something so specific to all of us. So yeah, like maybe we can like remove that term for the rest of the conversation. But like, if you talk about decentralized governance, at least,
yes. different question. So, yeah, different question.
Yes. So I know that like you guys like of course has like you know like started out working with some of the DeFi protocols. So maybe you can go a little bit into like some of the like possibilities there is with this like, you know, redefined parameter of not just voting with the tokens, but you know, you mentioned this like CSV file. You know, what are like some of the ways that you can see this playing out, and maybe you already have some projects running there. And what are the benefits of doing it like this?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to give away names yet, so I'll talk about Project A and Project B.
You can talk about it in vague terms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's okay.
Well, I mean, I think there's a really complex one of a DeFi protocol that's going to be using us. It's really cool where you have to hold the token in order to participate. So you know, it's like you have to have 1,000 tokens to be part of this. But your voting weight is not based on the number of tokens you have, right? That's just like, that's almost like the membership price that you pay. And then your voting weight is basically is based on the amount of deposits you've made into the DeFi protocol times the length of time that you've deposited, right? And so we talked a little bit about this before, this idea of like duration then creates this incentive for you to, you know, be able to hold on, you know, longer to, your deposit or your liquidity or your token or whatever it is. But, you know, I think this gets interesting because, like, if you think, you know, traditionally, there's a lot of questions about token distribution. Like, how do we have fair token airdrops so that we are putting tokens into the hands of the people who actually matter, right? And are actually, like, contributors. And part of what's cool about what we built is you can actually use us for that. Like, Eco, for example, did a contest through us where they were like, what, you know, what features do you want us to build? And then the winners get their token. And so they're putting their tokens into the hands of the people who have the most valuable idea. So there is a way to use us for that. But I think also, you know, eventually those tokens will go into the hands of the richest people who, you know, are going to sweep and try to centralize power and take over those tokens to have greater power within the protocol. And so thinking, you know, yeah, there's still a token required to participate, but your voting power is based on, you know, your actual usage is this like really interesting mechanism where at any given moment for any given decision, the power is being allotted to who is currently the most, you know, important user, not who in the past was an important user because they were mining to get an airdrop and get the token, but who currently is, right? And so I think like that's an example of something that's just like a really interesting one. Project B is another big DeFi protocol is using us for essentially ideathons for a project that they're building. And what they're talking about doing is they'll start off with like a council of like, you know, like a citizens council of like 100 people who they trust to be voters, right? And then every week, you know, whoever wins will get a little bit of money for their best idea, but they'll also join the citizens council. And so there's a status game attached to this where it's like, if you win, you get to be part of this big DeFi, you know, protocols, you know, citizens council that's on chain. It's great for your reputation. You know, that's something that you can like, you know, probably leverage maybe to get airdrops in the future from other protocols, maybe to get access. But you're also now part of that voting pool. And so they're, you know, progressively decentralizing their governance over time because that, you know, citizens pool will expand as more people win contests each week, are added to the pool, and then can vote as well. And so I think that's a nice way where it's like the governance, you know, the more governance you do, the better it gets. Because like the more governance you're doing in order to determine the winners, the more you're putting power towards those people to then make the decision who the winners are. And so it's like this kind of cool flywheel effect that happens.
Can you clarify? Because I've heard you talk about this before. Yeah. There's an allow list feature within Joke Race, right?
Yeah.
So everything you just described sounds amazing, but there's still that caveat, right? That people have been trying to figure out, like, okay, but it has to start somewhere.
Yes.
And it's most likely going to be centralized in the beginning.
Yes.
So can you just describe that feature a bit more, you know, for those that may not be familiar with it and like what it entails?
Yeah. So literally the allow list in its current form is just the CSV where it's column A is your addresses and column B is the number of votes that they each get. That's it. So you can literally pull that from any on-chain data you want. So again, like, yeah, if you want to, you know, do the mechanism I described, you're going to start more centralized and it's going to decentralize over time. You're going to start with a council of 100 people that you trust to make these decisions. And then over time, as more people are winning these contests, they're actually elections in disguise where they're being elected into the council. You don't have to do it that way. Like, you could start off by just having token voters, right? And you could be like, hey, you know, for the first 50 weeks, we're going to have the token voters vote. But then after 50 weeks, everyone who's won in the past, that's now our council, right? So it's like it's totally up to you however you want to define this. And again, that's what we're trying to be unopinionated about this. Like, I go and I'm at the podcast and I'm an asshole and I talk about all the things I believe. But like what I'm building is not supposed to reflect my beliefs, right? It should be open to people to use it however they want.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of being open, what has it been? You mentioned these projects that you are now onboarding. Like, what has it been? You know, it's an immutable set of smart contracts. What has it been that process? Explain to me that process of trying to like onboard, get integrations, partnerships. You know, I'd love to hear more about that whole process for you.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because there's kind of a trade-off where if you're coming up with a contest for maximum engagement and your goal is to use this for marketing, you want everyone going on social media, sharing it, trying to get votes, doing this on a recurring basis, getting prize money, right? Like, and just like using it to get, you know, your community more involved, thinking about you, like just aware of your product, then you probably want is a contest where you have tons of voters who people are all trying to petition and trying to get to vote for them. You probably want it to be really easy to participate, right? So that anyone can be part of this and they feel like they're part of the community. And that's your goal, right? Is like engagement, you know, marketing. if you're trying to do a contest where you're actually trying to come up with the best idea, right, then you probably want the opposite. You probably want like a really limited set of pool of voters, much more like a hackathon, right? Where it's like experts in the field, they're a jury of like really small, really well-known people who are, you know, top trusted, you know, decision makers. And then you probably want really advanced proposals where, you know, people have to give a lot of detail, a lot of information. And so it's this interesting thing because, you know, the question I always have when I talk to any protocol is like, well, what are you looking for? Do you want engagement? You want as many people participating in this as possible for this to go viral? Or do you want, you know, highest quality? And a lot of times the answer is like for it to be iterative, like start off with an idea, then, you know, have people submit like a fuller version of that, then have people submit, you know, who's going to build it, then have people, you know, like amend it. And so you can kind of like build this funnel where you start with engagement and you work towards quality. And I think that's a good way to do things. But different projects have very different responses to that, right, in terms of what they're looking for. And that's really interesting to think about, is it's like your governance is really decided based on whether you're looking for engagement or you're looking for quality. And, you know, there's good reasons to go for both. But you know, it is something I think of a trade-off.
Yeah, this is something we think about often, right, Gustav? Like how we navigate governance and how we see the different service providers come in.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like, I mean, I don't know anyone who has a problem with having too much engagement, you know, maybe except for, you know, sometimes we see some spam proposals about airdrops. But apart from this, you know, I think everyone would like to have a little bit more engagement.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, and so then the question is, well, how do you break down those barriers to make it easier for people to get involved, right? Which is also challenging. And do you want that? Do you want any rando being involved in your governance process, right?
Yeah. So David, I think like, you know, now, you know, we've seen like, of course, like, I mean, I think all of us, we're kind of quite familiar with the voter apathy we're having in general, right? And kind of like this, like, lag between, you know, like the people who hold the token, the people who want to vote.
Yep.
You mentioned a little bit about, you know, like, you know, this DeFi project was setting up this like new way, you know, you have to be like a user of the protocol for like a while, you have to hold like a minimum amount of the tokens as well.
Yep.
If we're already like struggling with apathy, do you think it makes sense to set up these like additional barriers or like making the voting systems more complicated?
Yeah.
Because aren't we just making it more difficult for the very small group of people who actually want to do governance to get into it? Or
it's such a good question, right? Because like there is also this thing I think about a lot when I'm talking to protocols about how they're designing their governance, which is like sometimes the simplest mechanism, even though it's not the best one, is the best one just because people understand it. Like, you know, just being able to have something that people can understand in a tweet without any complication is like really important to get people involved, right? It just the legibility of it. And so I do think that that's like a really, really important question. On the other side of things, I think like the idea that we need more people participating in governance is something I've never fully understood. Like, I don't know why you want just a bunch of random...
Just a little bit more.
Yeah, like
just a little bit more.
why do you want a bunch of random token holders making big financial decisions about how you diversify your treasury? It's like, that's something that you probably want people pouring over all day, getting paid for, who have spent years, you know, working on diversification of, you know, asset management. Like, you know, to let any rando just make the decision and say, oh, we need more randos, you know, jumping in here to vote, even though they haven't read the proposal and they don't know what it entails. Like, it's a little dangerous too. And so, again, that's the engagement versus quality question. If you want more engagement, then that's great. But like, think about more fun contests to come up with. And that's why we call it a contest and not governance, right? That can get more people involved in a way where their voices actually will be meaningful. And they will, you know, and you want to hear. So like an RFP is a good example, like saying like, what broadly are our priorities for this community? That's something where maybe you want a lot of people participating and you really benefit from hearing from what everyone thinks. But saying like, you know, do we diversify 1% of our treasury to this token or 2% to this token? Like, that's a really hard question that I don't know you want to let, you know, a bunch of random people make. So I think governance serves different purposes depending on the use case. And there are cases where you actually want it to be complex with a lot of friction and barriers because you don't want random people just jumping in who don't know what they're doing. But there's other cases where you absolutely lower those and get more people in.
I think there's also like, I mean, complexity can also, is not necessarily like a bad thing, right? I remember I saw like the other day, Rune, the founder of Maker, he basically said that, you know, like complexity is good, right? It should be, you kind of just go in and understand everything from day one.
You can tell.
Yeah, because of like the end game, right? he draw the comparison to like a video game, right? Like the first time you play a video game, like everything makes no sense to you, right? But as you play it continuously and more, you learn everything. And then, you know, even though it at the beginning is very complicated, over time it seems easier, right? And I would also say, you know, like I think like when we look at like governance participants, there's kind of like, you know, one type of participation, which is the more like sporadic. Oh, wow, this was like a fun contest in this case that I participated in, and I wanted to just jump in and do this one thing. And then you have the people who comes back like day after day, week after week, right? And these, of course, like two very different people. I think like all of us can agree we want more committed people who I don't see as just like a random person, right? But someone who actually spends the time week over week and comes back, you know, to participate in like a more like fulfilling way. So if you like remove like the random person who just comes in and votes on like an airdrop or, you know, participates in like one, you know, specific proposal because that's one thing that they want to do. But like these like recurring people, right? Like how do you see that, like, you know, you guys like trying to solve this issue with getting more of these like recurring people, or like people who really like is committed to governance?
Yeah.
How do you work with this topic, if at all?
I think the video game comparison is such a good one. Like, or I think about board games a lot, where it's like the more friction and complexity there is in the board game, the fewer people play it, but the more loyalty they have. And so like if you have like Twilight Struggle, right, it's this game that takes like 3 hours to learn how to play, and then it takes 12 hours to actually play it. You're like reliving all of the Cold War. You know, I've tried this once, but you like you realize, you know, very few people are going to make it through those 3 hours of learning how to play this game and then another 12 hours of actually playing it. But those who do are totally committed, right? Those are like the diehards who love, they actually are there because of the complexity. Like they like the friction and they like the challenge. And so then they're going to think this is the greatest game ever played. Whereas like on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have like Candyland, where it's like anybody can play Candyland in 2 seconds and no one really loves it, right? Because it's so easy. And so I think like governance is kind of like that too, where it's like, you know, you have to think like, you know, do we want to create a system where it's there's a lot of onboarding and a lot of friction, but then the people who make it past all those barriers are going to be the diehards. We're like the CrossFit of governance, right? You know, it's like, you know, these are people who like they live and breathe governance, and there's very few of them, but they this is what they live for. Or do you ease it up to get more people involved, but maybe they're not as loyal and they're not as sticky and they're going to leave, right? And again, that's where I think like with what we design is just to be as modular really as possible so that anyone can customize this however they want. So if you want to do these really advanced algorithms, like you can do those all totally on your own, just plug it into CSV, right? You want to do, yeah, you have to, you know, hold at least 1,000 of token A, and then, you know, have stake token B that's multiplied by the amount of ETH that, you know, you have swapped in the past, you know, plus the amount of liquidity provided over the duration of the time. It's like, that's fine. You can do that. And it's like, you've created a really complex game using us to get people involved, right? And you could even create these even more complex games where it's like, this is an 8 contest series, and like each series, it's like, you only get to go to the next contest if you've completed XYZ actions in the first. Like, we want to enable this, like, almost be a game engine for governance where people can come up with really, really complex ways of doing it. But they also could literally just say, hey, if you hold token A, you know, you get same number of votes as the token you have. We're running this on base, done. Right. And so like that's really the goal, is to like let people design it however they want without being the designers ourselves.
Since we're on the topic of gaming, I'm curious to hear more, David, about like gamification of governance. So you call them contests, which is obviously like a nod to trying to game this whole thing. Right. And obviously gaming, there's like the whole incentive design aspect to it that's related to it. Like, what's your take? How else can we gamify governance? Like, what else are you looking to do?
Yeah, so the whole thing started because like what I was noticing in DAOs was like a lot of DAOs are really good at acquiring users and really bad at retaining them. Maker's actually, I think, a great exception to this. But like it was, you know, you airdrop a token, a bunch of people join, and then nobody wants to stick around. And so like what I was thinking was like, is there a way where you could come up with a governance process that would force people to collaborate with each other and build social relationships? So the only way that they could win was if they worked together. And so like force this kind of like almost league structure where you would have like within a single contest, different leagues forming up that like organically, almost like sub DAOs, right? And so that was like the initial goal with like what we called then the joke race, where it was like, you're trying to like submit a terrible joke And if you were the number two joke, you won. And so if people put too many votes on it, you lost. People put too few votes on it, you lost. And so you would have to try to work with others to try to like scheme to get yours to win, right? And come up with all these like advanced strategies where you're putting more votes on the loser than you are on the winner. And so that was like, you know, an early way of thinking, if we gamify this, can you force social collaboration that will make people like want to come back and play this game again? And I think there's other ways that we're going to be able to do that. Like one is just building more social tools.
Did it work?
Yeah, it did. That was what was helpful. Like
maybe like an important question to ask.
Yeah, that's why I kept building this thing. Cause I was like, you know, the initial version, I was like, I don't know if this thesis is going to work. Let's see. And yeah, there started being this group called the Joke Cartel that would get together and they would like scam their opponents and they would like jump into chats and lie to them and trick them and then, you know, take their votes. And it was like, people were forming, like getting excited every week to play this game where they were like forming leagues together. And I think like, yeah, that's something I think about a lot now, which is like, how can we build something like that? So like an example would be something like vote decay is something I've thought about where it's like, what if you got rewarded for voting on the winner? Well, if you get rewarded for voting on the winner, then as soon as everyone sees what the number one is, they're all going to vote on that. Cause now they like, it's very clear what the winner is going to be. But if you have a thing like vote decay over time, then it gets interesting because it's like, you might have more voting power at the beginning when it's less clear who the winner is. And then you have very, very little voting power by the end when it's very clear. And so you have to try to like, you know, make this trade-off of like, do I vote earlier when it's less certain that I'm going to win, but I'll win a lot more? Or do I, you know, vote later when it's much more certain who's going to win, but I'm not going to win as much? And so there's a risk-reward game that you can kind of like play into in there. And so I think that's something that, you know, I've been thinking about. Just all sorts of social dynamics, like letting people being able to message each other while they're playing, being able to have secret chats, being able to like try to, you know, like how can we get people to like trade votes to say, hey, this vote doesn't matter that much to me, but it matters a lot to you. But this next vote that's coming up, that one matters a lot to me. It doesn't matter that much to you. Can we collaborate and negotiate? And of course, like all of this has traditionally been labeled as collusion, as this terrible thing. But I think if you get people to actually form social relationships with each other where they have to compromise, negotiate, think about what they want, like that's really actually the process of governance itself that gets people involved in this much more gamified way that builds longer lasting social relationships that actually are what are important for the long-term success of the, let's not call it a DAO, the community.
Yeah, this is something we run into a lot as delegates, right, Gustav? For the most part, for a long time, the process of actually voting has been very social incentive driven. You know, only until recently have delegates, you know, the people actually voting in protocols been paid. But yeah, I don't know. Like, Gustav, do you have a take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think like if we go back a little bit to this complexity again, right, where I think like we can all agree that like participating, I would say like committedly to a DeFi protocol, you know, whether that's like Maker or Aave or, you know, even, you know, Balancer or like, you know, any of the trading protocols, like it requires like quite a bit of commitment to kind of like go past like the initial complexity and then actually being able to participate fully, right? So there's like the initial like complexity that you need to like overcome to be able to understand and be not just this random token holder, but actually someone who can commit. And this would also require you to like come back most likely week over week. And then like doing this, you know, like amount of work and effort would, I would say like in many cases require something like an additional reward just outside of like, you know, kind of like the social status, because as like the way governance has been working so far is that like, you know, you become like a delegate, you know, you receive like a lot of like social recognition from other people. And this is something that like, you know, have given you like some status. I mean, we know it ourselves, right? We're delegates in over 20 protocols. And like, we definitely get like a lot of like social recognition, which, you know, can kind of push you in the beginning maybe to do it. But to kind of create this like long-term sustaining participation, you would require like some level of you know, financial, you know, also like motivation to be sticking around, right? If not, I think like you might just end up in a situation, which I think like happened a bit with, you know, these like forced delegation airdrops we saw with some of the L2s, right? Where, you know, on day one, we saw like the list just filled with like the big influencers and big Twitter profiles. But, you know, when it then came to actually doing the committed work as being delegates post, you know, a lot of them were just not picking up the work as they should, right? So I think like the financial incentives is more to create like long lasting participation, right? Because, you know, if you're requiring people to spend 10, 15, 20 hours a week on being there in your governance system, you should also expect that they would, you know, want some money for their time, especially when they could be spending this time on working on other projects or, you know, just being with friends or family or whatever else they want. Yeah, I don't know, David, like how do you think about these things, right? When we look at, you know, your contests, right? I know you had these like rewards pools. Have you so far seen, you know, some of the projects or teams actually committing, you know, like week over week, like financial resources to this as well?
Totally. Yeah. You know, it's funny to me because there's always a lot of pushback when you're like talking about paying people, like, why are you financializing this? You know, there should be integrity in the process. Would you want to get like, you know, paid for, you know, voting in a national election or something? It's like, you should get compensated for your work. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a lot of work to participate in this and it makes sense to get compensated for it. Yeah, having that incentive, of course, yeah. It's rich to be in crypto, which is formed off speculation, and say that people shouldn't have financial incentives. So, you know, one way I like to think about it is like poker. I've used this analogy before. It's like at a given poker game, there's people who are there just to win money. There's people who are there just to hang out with their friends. And there's people who are there because they want to win, right? And they just like the reputation of winning. And so you have reputational incentives, financial incentives, and social incentives. And even at the same table, different people will be there for different reasons. But poker is ultimately a really powerful and successful game because it's able to combine all three of these, right? And I think the same tends to be true for governance. Like, you want to try to have as many of these as possible. And like, definitely, like we've seen, you know, LiFi with $400 was able to get like 40 really strong ideas about how to improve their wallet, right? From like deeply committed community members thinking, you know, really, really deeply about what they wanted for it. And so that was like a lot of feedback they got. Whereas like, you know, not to put them on the spot, really excited that they used us in initial version, but like CoinDesk did a contest without, you know, incentives involved, which is great on, you know, who the top figure was in crypto. And there's very little engagement in that because, you know, there wasn't reason for people to participate. And so, yeah, you know, I think this, you need to have at least one of those categories: reputation, status, financial. But the more you have, the more people you're going to reach and the more powerful the incentive is, for sure. And I think the strongest contest tend to combine those together.
So just to clarify, you're a big proponent of hyper-financialization of governance?
Yeah. Financialize the whole thing. Only whales should have power. Just, you know, more plutocracy, the better.
Yeah, I've heard you give different takes on this. And I think your opinion has kind of evolved, right? You've been in the space quite a number of years, and you've seen what works and what doesn't work.
I've seen what doesn't work. I don't know if I've seen what works.
Yeah, totally. I want to shift over to something that I've heard you speak about a lot. And while I have you here, I want to take advantage of that. I want to talk about social graphs and attestations as it relates to governance. As it relates to governance, because this is something that's not really explored, right? But this is something that we, as a team, obviously we think about. It's like, how do you map what you do off chain? Like, how do you put that on chain so you could get maybe rewarded or, you know, recognized for that contribution? Like, what's your thought process there? How are you thinking that?
Yeah, so this goes to the reputational incentive piece, right? Which is thinking that you're developing on-chain reputation for participating in this contest, for getting votes, for voting, etc. And there's kind of two important ways to break this down, I think. And one is that every vote that you get is an attestation, right? Your community is saying to you, we voted for you because you, what your idea or what you contributed, we thought was valuable. So whether or not you win this, like, you are a valuable member of our community. And that's really powerful, right? Like, that's really powerful to say, okay, like, you know, I am a valuable member here. And so maybe I should get more governance power in the future. Maybe I should be allowed to vote in the future. Maybe another protocol wants to airdrop me their token because they see that I'm valuable, right? In this way. And so like, just as a almost like resume that gets you access to opportunities, I think it's really important. The even more important one, I think, is like thinking about shared preferences. So if you see that people are tending to vote on the same things over and over again, right, you can say, okay, there's a social graph here that these people have aligned interests. And like, maybe you're noticing that someone is submitting an idea and they never win and it's always number 10, but the people who are voting for them are giving 100% of their votes. And so, in other words, it's very polarizing because people are either giving 100% of their votes or they're giving 0% of their votes. And maybe it's not like the biggest token holders who are voting for them, but people are consistently voting together. Well, now you have a lot of data to say, okay, there's something here. Like there's something where there's like a sub community that believes really powerfully in, you know, a really contrarian idea against the majority. Maybe we want to fund that. Like maybe we want to give them some power, even though they're not winning this thing, because they have a powerful social group that is really aligned in their interests. And so they, you know, maybe like instead of before they fork us or leave us, we want to fund them to do this through us, right? And if the community doesn't do that, then maybe they can look at each other and say, hey, we're not getting any support from this community, but we notice that we keep voting on the same things together and we keep believing in the same things really passionately. Maybe we should form our own DAO. Maybe we should go form our own community, right?
Doesn't token-based voting exacerbate that? Sorry to jump in.
Well, that's the question, right? Is like, you know, you can have the token, you know, if you have token based voting, maybe they're losing, but you're noticing there's more holders that are voting for this one thing, right? Even though they're not getting it. So it's like, even if you use token based voting, someone might be able to go take the on-chain data and retroactively use different metrics to calculate who in their mind the winner is. Where they're saying, oh no, I'm going to go, you know, rerun this contest. And now if every single voter had been given 100 votes instead of votes proportionate to their token, this is who would have won. Therefore, that's who I think is the winner. Therefore, that's the person I want to support. Therefore, I'm going to go start a community with them, right? Like on-chain data gets really interesting because anyone can retroactively calculate it in very different ways from what the contest itself was intended to be calculated as. So like all of that is just like really powerful, I think, for these kind of social graphs. And then like the final thing is like you can imagine someone going in and wanting more info about their users. Like you're a DeFi protocol and you see that these people tend to vote on the winner every time. Well, you can go into their wallets and see what other DeFi protocols they're using. You know, you can say, okay, this is like the profile or customer segment, right, of our community, and this is how they tend to use, you know, their wallets, and this is what they tend to be interested in. Like, that's a lot of good intel for us to understand who our user base is as well.
Totally. As like delegates and operators within these protocols, I think about attestations in the sense that, like, how do you map your contributions on chain? Like all the stuff you're doing off chain, like how do you map that on chain? And that's the biggest like gap that we have at the moment, right? Have you seen anything that's like working towards that? Like
totally.
What's going to get us there?
Yeah, I mean it's a couple things. Like one is, you know, the proliferation of L2s is a game changer for doing stuff on chain. Like right now, if you launch a contest through us on Ethereum mainnet, it would cost you like $200 to launch the contest and like $40 to submit, right? If you do that on Polygon, it's 32 cents to create a contest and it's like 1 cent to submit, right, or to vote. And so just, you know, being able to like move everything on chain, it's so cheap to do stuff now. And then there's going to be ways to even abstract that away where, you know, those could be pre-funded, for example, or people might just swap with whatever token they have in their wallet to participate. And so I think like that's step one is like we just haven't done stuff on chain because it's been prohibitively expensive to do anything besides a financial transaction in the past. And so now we're going to start building these social data that eventually will be more powerful than the social data you have in Web 2. But the other question is like, how do you import all the stuff that you're doing in Web 2 onto Web 3? And like, how can you take an API, map that onto somebody whose on-chain address you know, and create like a you know, data rich profile for them? And that's really the job of like reputation protocols to do that. And, you know, excited to see that happen. But I think in the moment you could do stuff like Guild, where, you know, you create a guild, if you've completed XYZ action off chain, you are then able to join the guild, but you join with your wallet and it's now effectively tied that off chain action to an on chain address. And then you could allow list everybody from that guild to go participate in your contest because they've completed, you know, certain off chain actions. So there are these kind of like hacks to do that. There's also tools that, you know, like probabilistically guess someone's Twitter account, mapping it to their on-chain address based on what their PFP is, or, you know, what their handle is, you know, stuff like that too. But it's absolutely, I think it's a huge problem, which is like Web3 data should be way richer than Web2 data because it's not gated. And it's like an open API that's interoperable, but in practice, that's not true. In practice, like the Web2 data is much more powerful because we've been building it for 10 years and we haven't built any Web3 data besides financial transactions at all.
Yeah, totally. As delegates, like we rely on just all this off-chain data. All we could point to, right? What do we point to usually, Gustav? Like proposals created. You could, you know, if they're on-chain, you can point to them. Participation rate, but they're so like they're so surface level, right? There's so much more other things that go on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really like also because like I think like today, you know, we look at like a lot of these metrics, you know, kind of like from like an objective standpoint when I don't really think that they are like, you know, for example, like amount of proposals are just seen objectively as being good, right? But the amount of proposals are just objectively not necessarily good, right? Like I saw like some post of like how the delegates were like, you know, kind of like highlighting, you know, oh, like in the last like year, you know, we increased like the proposals in like Aave, you know, with like 10x or like yeah. We also saw like a lot of proposals go up in like 1 inch with, you know, like quite a lot, whereas like, you know, like if we look at like those proposals, yeah, sure, of course, like to an extent the increased activity must be good, right? But is all of them really needed? So those are like some of the things as well that I think is like really interesting to like kind of continue to like dive into, right? Because our attentions, you know, should not necessarily be like diverted to the point where just, you know, any amount of proposals
it's the same thing as like airdrop farming, where it's just like the more transactions have been performed by an address, the better, right? And it's like, well, no, actually it's significantly worse because now you have to read through all these terrible proposals. Like it's spamming our time, right? And our attention. And so that's again where I think like stuff like the voting, when you understand that a vote is a reputational attestation from a community, like the fact that you submitted something and got a vote for it is important. And that's also why it matters that like the way we operate is ranked choice, you know, voting effectively, where it's like any voter will have 100 votes. They can distribute that among as many proposals as they want, as many submissions as they want. So they could put 100 all towards one, let's say, or they could split it up between multiple. But in that sense, you're never, you know, voting against anything. So it's always positive, but you are leaving all of those bad proposals to get zero votes or zero attestations. And so then like, that's a much more meaningful metric to be like, okay, the number of votes you got over time is like a level of, you know, the attestations you've gotten from our community, not just that you like submitted something, but you submitted something valuable.
David, one last thing before we go, I want to get your take on AI.
Oh yeah.
What's your how do you see AI playing in DAO governance? Like, do you see its role?
Yeah.
In the space.
So I tend to think like there's two ways it can go. It's like if you break the governance into submissions and voting, right? People submit and then people vote. And as I said, like the way we designed it is you can have these be totally different pools or subsets of each other or whatever you want. Like I think it gets really interesting if it's like, what happens if a bunch of people are submitting ideas and then AI is voting on them? But probably the more interesting one is the reverse of that. Like, what if you have AI generating a bunch of ideas and then humans are the curators? Because what AI is very good at doing is creating content, right? What it's not very good at doing is like, you know, understanding what is good content versus bad content. And so I think like having the humans as a judgment layer to like pick out which one of these is most meaningful, but just like the AI as an idea generator can be really powerful. And I think also just like in terms of being able to create submissions that are, you know, fuller, richer. Yeah, it's a time saver, right? To be able to use AI to create like fuller submissions as well. I'm personally not using it for any of these things. Long-term, I do think there's an interesting world where it's like AI is creating a bunch of content, but humans are curating it because humans are tastemakers and AI is not.
Why do you think Web3 apps haven't embraced AI as much as like you see on Twitter, you know, tech Twitter, Web2 Twitter all the time, all these AI apps, but Web3 apps haven't really embraced it, or maybe there's no need for it just yet. What's your take?
It's pretty hard. Like, you know, I mean, there's stuff like Inference Labs, Modulus Labs, right? They're working on some really cool AI stuff, right? Where it's like you pay an AI bot to manage your funds for you. I think they did this and I think it lost all the funds. But like, you know, there's, you know, to map AI on chain is actually a really difficult like ML problem. And so Modulus is working on that. And I think we are going to see a bunch of this stuff. So I wouldn't rule it out yet. But I do think there is a way where like AI is based off of abundance and crypto is based off scarcity. And so there's a way that they complement each other a lot, but like, we'll see. Like, will there be AI MEV bots? Like, I think so. There probably already are, right? It probably already is being used in ways that we're not totally aware of. But fundamentally, a lot of crypto comes from the advantage of taste making, human element, social capital, reputation, all these things that AI can't quite do yet. So I think they're going to intermix in a lot of ways, but I don't think it's quite happened yet.
So perhaps related to what you just answered, so a fun question we have is, what one project or solution are you dying to have in the space, but you wouldn't touch or want to build?
Yeah, reputation protocols. Everything I just talked about, I don't want to build because it's so hard. It's such a hard problem and it's hard to monetize, right? But like, man, the sooner that we can get those reputation protocols that are taking all this data, not just from us, but every other social layer, to be able to, you know, let you calculate value to you, to say, hey, this person is valuable to me because we share values. Like, that's what valuable means, right? It's a shared value alignment, and that you can measure that on chain based on the fact that they tend to vote the same way you did, shared preferences, used the same protocols you did, bought the same NFTs. Like, all of that, I think, is just so powerful for being able to identify valuable contributors and create more meaningful communities together. And I think it's like, it's an unlock for us in both directions, because we can feed into that and we can build much richer data. And then that can be used to determine governance power in return. And so there's like a flywheel there where it's almost like we need that counterpoint. There's a lot of cool projects working on this, like Intuition, Nucoin, Gateway, Karma 3, you could even say like Disco Govern, right? And so like, it's an exciting space, but it's a very, very hard one, and one that I personally want to tackle.
Yeah, it's hard, but it's needed, right? Yeah, so we'll leave that for them. Yep. We'll leave that for them to build. All right, guys, I know you got to hop, Gustav. Any final thoughts or comments as we wrap?
I mean, I think from my side, you know, I think like now with the Joke Race V3 coming out, I think it's going to be super exciting how, you know, a lot of these teams will be doing things on top of you guys in the future. And, you know, really excited to see some of these, you know, like tokenless voting mechanisms coming out and seeing, you know, how they will interact with the protocols and the delegates and the other stakeholders that we currently see in the governance community. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, the next year or so, everything that's going to be made up. I'm sure there will be a lot of stuff that we can't even think about today being done. So really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see what goes right and what goes wrong.
Hopefully more right than wrong. All right, guys. This has been a fun conversation. Thanks for joining us,
yeah,
David.
I really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
It.
Thanks for having me. This is one of the best. It's really nice talking to people who've thought even more deeply about this than I have. I really appreciate it.
A little bit. Thank you, Gustav.